Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist and painter Shirley Hogg. Hogg is originally from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and is a graduate of the University of Toronto, where she received a degree in art history. For years, she did casual design work for friends, but did not begin to paint until she was in her 40s. In 1999, she had her first solo show at the Katamit Art Gallery on Cape Cod, where she was living at the time. She eventually landed in our region and joined the State of the Art Gallery in Ithaca about 6 years ago, where she has participated in exhibits, including a solo show, Awaiting the Ark, in November 2016, which depicted gorgeous life-size paintings of endangered animals. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, you talk in your bio that you knew at a young age that you wanted to be a painter, but your father discouraged you, said you have to get a proper degree and do not do this. Tell us about your childhood and that the dream just went on about being a painter, right?
Yeah, well, you know, my dad was old school, and art school to him was not school at all. And so I had the marks, we used to call them, to go to college, so he decided for me that would be best for me. But as a young child growing up in Hamilton, I always knew I wanted to do my painting and my drawing, because that's all I did.
Uh-huh.
And all my friends knew that's all I did. So I did tell you that story, Tish.
I want you to tell me the story. When you were 8 years old,
yeah.
This stayed with you all your life.
It did.
Tell us, you were wandering alone.
It was a very big experience for me, because for one thing, I know now, it was 1 mile from my home. At least. I was 8 years old, wandering around by myself. It was typical in those days to let children go. As long as I was home for lunch or dinner, I was fine. So there I was on Main Street, Hamilton, and there was a big building, which I can't find a picture of. I'd sure like to see it. Now it's a big hospital, but there was a little dog in the doorway. And I thought, wow, that's a cute dog. So up I go to pat this little dog. And a woman inside says, oh, come on in. This is the Hamilton Art Gallery. So, of course, I didn't know what an art gallery was. And in I went and saw this expanse of space and this low lighting and things hanging on the walls. So I just wandered around in there for a while. And I found a picture, which has influenced me ever since, by Alex Colville, of a horse running at night along a track. The track is gleaming because there's a train approaching. So you see the horse and the train about to collide. And as a child looking at that, I thought, I'm home.
Wow.
I know now what there is for me in the world. This is where I want to be.
God, that's an amazing story. It really
yeah.
is. So you did end up going to college and studying art history.
Yes.
I'm surprised your father thought that was a good degree to get, actually.
Oh, he didn't. Oh, no. He would have loved me to do engineering. I was good at math. I used to take math wherever I could because I could get my homework done really fast, and then I could draw.
But while you were studying art history, did you paint? Did you pursue this
no.
dream or this passion
no, no,
at all?
No. We used to, in the course at that time, I don't know what it's like now, we had to do whatever period we were studying. I remember doing Michelangelo, so we did frescoes. We actually put plaster on plywood and painted on the wet plaster. We did medieval painting where you do layers and layers and layers. But it was never to do your own work. It was just to learn techniques so you understood who you were studying and what they were doing.
Wow.
So I loved doing that. That was
so
fun.
You got to at least indulge in some form
yeah.
of art.
Yeah.
Whether it was from yourself or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what a road you've been on. So you did pursue something creative, though. You got into design work,
well,
designing gardens
easy.
And kitchens.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, but tell us a little bit about that. That was a little path to the dream, right?
Oh, of course. So I guess it kept it alive, and it made a little money.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. I was staying home with my kids, as we most did in those days.
Yeah.
And so I just, yeah, helped friends out here and there. The best job I had was designing a whole kitchen, tearing out 3 rooms and making a whole new kitchen in this 1700s house. Came out wonderfully, and that was an extremely exciting experience.
So you didn't just design it on paper. You were actually hands-on.
Yeah, I was
tearing the walls and building.
Well, no, we had workers, so I was there with the carpenters every day and shaping this space, and it... I do love doing design work, but I like painting more.
Oh, yeah. Well, so tell us, when your son started college, you knew something got triggered that you had to paint now or never.
Yeah.
I've got to do this. Well, what was that? Do you remember what it was that made you jump over that barricade?
I think it was that he was going to college, and I knew that I never really wanted to be in studying art history and philosophy and languages, which is what I was doing. I knew there was something else I really wanted to do, and I think I saw him taking off, and all of a sudden I thought, I'm going to be stuck in a job now because we need to pay for this college, and then my daughter's coming up, and I just couldn't bear it. My husband was very nervous. He didn't want, even though I was working at a garden center in order to meet clients for what I hoped to do eventually, which was garden design. And so anyway, I had this dream of doing garden design. I still hadn't really thought of painting. And I went up to Radcliffe. They had a certificate program in this, and it was a very good program. And I took it for 1 year, and I adored it. I mean, I just loved it.
This was a certificate program for design, right?
Yeah. For garden design specifically. But it still wasn't right. And I had this harridan of a teacher. She caused two people to have near nervous breakdowns. She was just horrendous, but she loved me. Everything I did was outside the box, totally what she said not to do, but I did it just for me, and she loved my work. Well, that was very affirming.
Yeah.
Not for the design, amazingly, but for myself, and gave me strength, I think, to say, I think I'm going to just paint.
So do what did you do to start that whole thing going? Did you go to an art store and get some canvases? Did you buy paint?
I went and got watercolors. Mm-hmm. Must have ordered. I don't remember that process. I was also at that time studying Eastern meditation quite intensely, going down to an ashram on weekends in South Fallsburg, New York. That was a great experience because I think that actually was a turning point. I learned to meditate. And I remember meditating with a lot of people once, and I was trying to find myself, like, what shall I do with the rest of my life? And I would see my hand drawing. I'd think, I know I like to draw. I'm trying to think of what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And then I would get into meditation again on this journey, and again, I would see my hand drawing. Finally, I clued in that this might be what I was looking for. And so that was another kind of gift.
Yeah, it was also a step toward where we find you right now. You say you painted in seclusion for 3 years.
I did.
Tell us about that. Did you establish a little studio in your house? And did you tell your husband you were painting?
Oh, yeah, my husband knew I was painting. It was right off our bedroom. We happen to have a wonderful old Quaker house on Cape Cod, a big center door colonial house. And off our bedroom was this light greenhouse room, lots of windows, and looked out over the sea. It was a really fine room. And I just took that over for my work. And I didn't want anybody seeing it because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I remember painting a lot of pears.
Oh, really? I was going to ask you what kind of subject matter you were pursuing.
I just painted pears and did them in different colors and did geometric things. I mean, I was just finding my way, but allowing myself to find my way. I wasn't putting pressure on myself to do any specific thing, and that's why I didn't want anybody in there. I didn't want input.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists feel like that. They need to
experiment.
And resolve their journey a bit before somebody else comes in and comments on it. Even a look. As somebody looks askance at something, you think, you know.
Maybe. No, I can understand that. I mean, you had already been discouraged enough on your journey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that you did need it, and especially if you had meditation as one of the tools that you could use to actually see where you were going.
Yeah.
That's interesting. When did you start painting animals? Because your animals are stunning. They're absolutely stunning.
I just started painting pets. I painted my daughter's pug and cats. McGurdy's cat was one of my first ones. And that's when I began to realize that I was painting life-size. I didn't know I was doing it. I just gravitated.
And this was watercolors that you were doing.
Yeah, and watercolors.
Did you draw before you started the actual painting?
Yeah.
How did you structure it?
Well, I did. I've always loved to draw. So I took a few courses at RISD. That's Rhode Island School of Design in Providence. And I took some courses at Mass Art in drawing. as it happens, watercolor's hard to teach.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah, people can teach you techniques, but they can't really teach you. I think every watercolorist develops their own way of working in it. And really, nobody can teach you except yourself. You've just got to keep doing it.
Yeah, it's a kind of a mysterious way to paint in some ways. Because it's almost like ghosts appear on the paper,
I know.
On the paper,
well,
doesn't it?
I think of it as alive.
Ah.
I've tried oil painting, and I feel like it's glue. It doesn't do anything. You put it on there, it sticks there. But if you get to know, you have to know really a lot about the paint, not just the color, but how different blues interact with different yellows to give different effects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very long process to learn how to do this, and you need a lot of time and a lot of quiet.
Yeah, and big trash cans, right?
Yes.
So that you can dump some of the stuff that
don't like. You wouldn't believe it, Tish, even yet. I mean, every painting is an experiment.
I'll bet.
Every single one. I have to develop the colors, the way I'm going to make this thing, everything.
So what gave you the courage to start showing this to people? Because I know you connected with that art gallery on Cape Cod.
Yeah.
And you ended up having a big show, and it was sold out.
Yeah.
And so what gave you the courage to actually first start venturing out and even showing this to people, let alone having an exhibit?
Well, the owner of the Katahmet Art Gallery at that time was a wonderful woman, about my age, who was a very heavy into transcendental meditation.
Mm.
She was almost like a monk. You know, she lived above this art gallery, and the way she ran that gallery was in tune with her way of being. So it was a wonderful, wonderful space. It had been an old sail loft, and again, there was this vast expanse of space, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
And she divided it into two sections so that it wasn't overwhelming, and she had couches in there, and the post office was in the same remote little complex that this place was in, and people would drop in. It was very casual, as would I, to see what was on the walls. And I must have got talking to her, and she said, well, a few people are going to get together and paint, so why don't you come?
Ah.
So I did, and I met some people, and I started painting with them, painted the most revolting still lives you've ever seen in your life.
Really?
Yes.
So you found painting with a group of people changed your technique in some way?
No, it didn't change my technique, but it got me into that gallery. And so finally, I had a lot of work, and I don't remember when or how, but I found myself having a show. And I wasn't the least bit nervous, which amazes me now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really care. I wanted, I mean, in terms of what people thought. I thought, well, the animals will be out there, and that's...
So you were painting animals at that time, too.
Yeah.
Were you also showing still lives in some of the other stuff that you had started painting?
I do the odd still life, or I used to in those days.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I still didn't know what track I was really on. But
God, but you know what? That's amazing to me, because it must be that once you were able to pursue the art, the rest of it didn't matter, because you found your road.
Matter. And I think having had the meditation background really helped me ego-wise, because I felt like it was a gift. I really did. I felt like the universe had given me this through supporting me, and all I had to do was be grateful and do it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Shirley Hogg. She is an artist and painter, and we're talking about her work both in the past and in the present. Now, your most recent work was at the State of the Art Gallery in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
It was endangered species, endangered animals. To tell us about that, you are obviously interested in animals, but what made you decide to focus on endangered species?
Well, of course, I mourn the loss of these creatures, and I just wanted to paint them. A quote I love is from Henry Beston, The Outermost House. He's actually talking about birds on the beach, but he called them other nations.
Mm.
And that's what I think of all these species as being. They are other nations. And what I paint is like an ambassador for that species. I'm not painting a specific animal, even though it can be. It's really just to show you, let you have the experience of meeting one of these creatures. So I try to bring it as close to the viewer space as
that's
I can.
What that, you wanted the viewer to look at the animal eye to eye, you said in one of your statements.
And I don't have any background, because I dropped that quite early on because it's too specific. And people will say, oh yeah, there's a lion, they live in the jungle, and separate yourself. If you just see a lion, you're both standing there in the same space. And it gives a whole, that's the experience I'm trying to give people.
Yeah, the exhibit was absolutely amazing. And yeah, I was wandering through the gallery and looking at these incredible creatures, I wondered how you did this. I mean, were you looking at photographs, memory? Did you actually go to Africa and see any of these creatures? Because, I mean, some of them aren't totally gone yet.
Oh, no. No, they aren't gone. And, well, one was the Eastern cougar is extinct declared extinct in 2011. And but the others, the way I arranged the show was I put a Japanese torii. I wanted to have some way of dividing the space, and because it's a long, narrow space, and I thought, well, I'll divide it with something. I thought, oh, a Japanese torii would be nice, because then when you walk through a torii, you're walking into sacred space. So the beginning of the gallery are all four animals that man has helped and have thrived because of it. Mm. So those you saw, the Yellowstone wolves and the black-footed ferret and others. And then you walk through the torii and you're in the sacred space, which I thought of as a sanctuary. If these animals could do it, they would ask for sanctuary because they are being eradicated. They're mainly, almost all, because their habitat is being taken over by us.
Yeah.
And I think we all forget that we're animals.
Oh, I think people do. They go out of their way to try to forget that.
Yeah, I know.
They want to feel powerful and like they're in control of things.
But we need what the animals need as much as they do.
You know, I remember in the exhibit, if I remember correctly, you had some kind of a sheet of paper over one.
Yeah,
one
that was the extinct one.
The one that's extinct. I think that was a fabulous way of touching people.
That did touch people.
Oh, it was amazing.
I had it painted. It took 4 years to get these works done. And so that one was painted early on. That was actually a cougar that I saw in my daughter is a vet now. And she was looking after a zoo in Springfield, Mass. And we went, and there was this cougar. It wasn't the Eastern cougar, but it was a cougar that I could take photographs of and be with and learn about. And and then I just looked up the Eastern cougar and changed the coloration a bit. But the fact that it's extinct is just...
Oh, that's just heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
And the way you depicted it was so powerful.
That was the end of the story.
Powerful, yeah.
Tish, because it was painted, and watercolor fades very easily, and my studio has a huge skylight. So I put trace, this see-through paper that artists use to do early drawings. So I put that over it to protect it from the light, and then I thought, you know, we can't see this guy anymore, and this is kind of neat. So I framed it like that, and Francie Fawcett, who was in the gallery and was helping me hang the show, said, well, how are you going to get that tissue paper off for the show? And I said, oh, no, it doesn't come off. It's part of the show. And she said, but you can't see it. And I said, I know, Francie, we can't see it ever again.
God, that was brilliant.
Yeah, it just happened, Tish. So I was... And, yeah, I can't tell you the number of people that said that they sat there and cried.
Yeah,
I don't really. The whole sanctuary experience was a gift to me to be able to give to others, because it was at a time politically when we really needed it.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you, too, since you did this exhibit and you're so interested and in love with animals, as am I.
Yeah, oh, good.
Do you get into the politics of it? Do you get into environmentalism? Are you an activist? Do you get involved in trying to save the ones that are still with us?
I don't do anything specifically except sign every petition that ever was. And also when my husband, who does the taxes for us, luckily, when he tells me what I made from this show, I will give 25% of that to the World Wildlife Fund, which thrills me.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes it all worthwhile, because that really goes to protecting environments. And I'm becoming a lot more political than I ever thought I could be, just in the last couple
of
months.
A lot of people are. We're trying to save the planet now, not just species.
Exactly.
And not just each other.
Yeah. And I know that the times have really shifted where there's definite peril.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for all of us. And yeah. We do have to remember we're animals. We're in peril, people.
We are.
Now, do you ever regret that it took you so long to find your place in the art world and pursue this? Do you have regrets?
No, I think we all have journeys, and you can't hurry growing. And all the experiences I had, and there was a lot of frustration. I mean, staying home and looking after children and doing all the things that traditionally women have done without the outlet of my art was pretty frustrating at times. So I'm very, very grateful. I think it's just gratitude that you come to it at all.
Yeah, it's a miracle.
It
doesn't it feel kind of like a miracle?
Well,
that people find their place. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all have a fire in us, and you can try to put that out, and some people really succeed. But if you're
other
lucky,
people end up in depressions and in terrible mental straits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I feel very fortunate to. When I go in my studio, I'm in a that zone is.
It's a sacred space
sacred
for you,
space,
probably.
Yes.
Do you still like to paint by yourself and not show it to anybody till you're ready?
I'm pretty much like that because it's just my relationship with that animal. That's really why I paint them, is to be with them for that time.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Do you only paint animals? You say you do some still lives. Do you anything else besides animals and still lives?
I keep thinking I will because it's really fun to do an iris or something with the light coming through it. I mean, just the doing of it is fun, but every time I think I'll do that, I think, yeah, but I really want to do something else, like an elephant. So I don't. And I did for a while, did both, but now I really can't resist animals.
Well, you know what amazes me about your paintings, too, is how alive their eyes look. Sometimes when people paint animals, they look like cartoons almost.
Yeah, right.
The eyes look dead.
Yeah.
You know, like taxidermy kind of things.
Oh,
but
gosh.
The eyes on your animals are so alive. It's unbelievable how you're able to do that.
Well, I put the eyes in first. And if the eyes aren't if they're not alive, I don't pursue that painting.
So you paint around the eyes.
I paint around the eyes, yes. And so I've got that animal with me, really with me. Actually, the spirit bear. Gosh, he was difficult to handle, let me tell you, in the studio.
That's one of your big, huge ones.
Yeah, huge, a full-size grizzly with samurai outfit on. And he,
What made you put an outfit on that one? That one seems so different than the other ones were realistic, you know?
Yeah, because I have great respect for Japanese culture, and the samurai warriors were so honorable and had a great code of honor,
majestic,
and respect.
Yeah.
And I wanted this animal to be, because in times of great trouble, oddly enough, Tish, the American Indian, some American Indian tribes would turn to the spirit bear. He could lead you out of great trouble. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly where we are right now. And it was somehow an intuitive response, like artists have, to what we need. We need the spirit bear to lead us.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it was the biggest thing in the gallery, and it certainly stood out. It stood out with the one that was covered and gone now.
Well, one person pointed out, which was really sweet, the way they were hung, they were at right angles to one another. And if you looked at the shrouded panther, cougar.
Yes.
There was the whole reflection of the spirit bear in it. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Wow.
It
was a really magical paintings. Now, since you do like to paint solo and you're kind of reclusive about it, what's it been like being part of a collective gallery like State of the Art? You have to participate in some ways, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm quite outgoing. I really like to be with people.
Uh-huh.
And I don't show there a lot. I just show occasionally.
Uh-huh.
And especially lately, because I've been saving every piece for the show, and it's big. You know, we don't have space. There's a back room, the salon.
Yeah.
Well, certainly nothing of mine fits back there. And if it's in there, it looks silly because it's so huge. So I don't show there a lot, but I do like to be in some sort of community. I don't want them in my studio with me, but I love them there.
has been being a part of a collective changed your life, though, in some ways? This is only the second time you've done that, right?
Yeah.
You're part of that other art.
No, it's very enriching because you talk to other artists, and Jane talked about being in this meaning group. A few of us years ago tried to think, what the heck is art? Why do we make art? What good is it? And we got into this group. That's a wonderful group.
And so what did you guys come to any conclusions about why you make art?
No, never. Never any conclusions. Just lots and lots of talking about journeys, really, of what each of us is doing, the struggles, the art we've found. I brought in Kiki Smith, and some of Kiki Smith's stuff is pretty shocking. So I shocked the group quite a bit with a few of her works, and it just goes like that. We just bring in a quote, a painting that stimulates us, we want to speak about, or whatever, and we just talk art.
Yeah, well, that sounds enriching just unto itself. It's a way of, you know, fostering some kind of inspiration between artists.
And
you know,
support.
A lot of people think artists are all competing with each other, but you know, the artists I've met, I don't really think I know one where that's happening. You know, I mean, there is a lot of talk about how women artists are still underrepresented, especially in the major galleries and stuff.
So, I know.
I mean, there is still some stuff to work out in regard to, you know, being able to come to the table.
I think it's whether I'm lucky enough to have a husband who was an oceanographer and earned a living enough for us to survive without my working, per se. I did work on the side, but if I didn't work, we obviously didn't starve.
Yeah.
But I have a couple of friends who are professional artists. That's a different thing. There is a bit of fear there. Will I still be something people want?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So I feel very lucky to be out of that loop.
So have you ever considered, because your stuff is so beautiful, they look like illustrations sometimes, have you ever pursued trying to illustrate children's books or nature books?
That's what I thought first I would do is children's books. But again, I don't like to be that restrained, you know, page after page after page with a character. It looks just the same as the one before and all this. And
never thought of that. Well, Shirley, we are almost out of time. Give us just a couple lines about what you would tell somebody who's thinking about doing art, but who might be older and have put it off, to give them some words of encouragement. What would you say?
I would say, what is it you would like to do? And if they said, I want to paint in oils, I'd say, well, today we're going out to get oil paints and canvases. And tomorrow you'll start.
Yeah, don't put it off for even a second.
Never put it off.
Yeah.
You'll have no regrets.
that's great advice. Now, any place where people can see your work upcoming in any galleries?
Yeah, it'll be, some work is at the Cummings Nature Gallery right now. And that's near Rochester, beautiful gallery. And then there's going to be a lot of the exhibit that was awaiting the Ark will be in Homer. At the gallery in Homer.
Oh, nice.
The name of it.
Yeah.
In the summer, in August.
And also contact information that people can get in touch, and maybe you'll be advertising where these exhibits might be.
Yeah. My address is shirleyhogg.com. That's my website, and I'm afraid it isn't very up to date, but it soon will be. And my email is shirleyjhogg@gmail.com.
Well, great. Well, Shirley Hogg, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. This has been great. And people, do go to her website. Go to some of these exhibits. You've got to meet these animals because they are with us still.
Her
paintings are just beautiful.
Yeah.
Shirley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.